Good morning, Miss Wonderful. Good morning, Mr. Wonderful. Good morning, all of the wonderful people on the face of the earth. Good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Mr. Wonderful speaking to Mr. Wonderful, and this is Mr. Wonderful speaking to Mrs. Wonderful, and this is Mr. Wonderful being wonderful all the time. Now you say, what got into you, Herb? Well, this is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capra, California, with Instant Illumination. Good morning, Mr. Wonderful, Mrs. Wonderful, Kitty Wonderful, to everybody. I have just been experiencing a number of interesting people and their lifestyle in my world. And I am not sick and tired of it, but I will not allow it to continue. These people feel they can feel sorry for themselves. These people feel they can have self-pity. These people feel that they can wear the outer garments of horror and these outer garments of horror are outer garments that we claim. No one forces us to get into them. No one forces us to have any attitudes about ourselves unless we want them. And then we say, oh, help me, help me, help me. I'm having the results of having a bad attitude. I'm having the results of having a bad attitude. Now, have you ever heard that? No one has been so precise about what their condition is. They don't realize, they do realize, but they don't want to claim it, that their bad attitude has made their life into a horror. And they have chosen to put it on. Now, I've worked in many mental hospitals over my years, and as a student minister and other things, and as we worked in these mental hospitals, we were brought to face-to-face with people, and none of these people were insane, if the word insane means that they were incapable of doing normal human things. All of these people were perfectly capable of doing normal human things, but they chose to do things that were not acceptable by society. They chose to do things that society did not approve of. And their other mentally ill people didn't approve of it either. Everybody approves of themselves, and they don't really approve of themselves. They just do these things. Now, why do we do these things? Why do we get ourselves into a state of consciousness where we take ourselves away from our normal life activities? Why do we mentally boggle ourselves to such a point that we are not stable and cannot live harmoniously with our community? Well, we do it because from childhood on, we have been trained that we are not very nice people. We are not very beautiful people. We're not very harmonious people. We're not very good people. Now, my friends, boys and girls, as I will call you, my friends, has there ever been a child who was not trained in that way? All of you were. All of us were. Some took offense at it and said, go jump in the lake. I'm wonderful. And they wouldn't accept it. And others, they say, you're right, I'm terrible, you're right, I'm a bad person, you're right, I'm not worth anything, you know. And so, you see, I'm just going to take the two extremes. You either say that you're a good person and you don't let anything touch you, or you say that the world is right, that you are a bad person. Do you know what you did this morning? You made it rain. I made it rain? Yes, you did. You had a bad attitude and you made it rain. If you had been a loving person today, it would have been a lovely day. And we put the blame down. And, of course, we take the blame, too. And so we think that we're the one. Now, do you realize, you have been so mean and so hateful around here that that's why your father died? Ooh-wee.
No.
That is a cross that is given to many, not quite as badly as I said it, but I said it badly so it would be very obvious. But this cross is given to people, to children, and to adults. And they're made to feel absolutely miserable by their choice. If you are a good kid, for instance, and you go around to your mommy and your daddy, and you do nice things for them, and you are sweet to your brothers and sisters as far as you can be, you know, and if you are doing good things in the neighborhood, and the neighborhood says, it's a normal kid, an ordinary kid, you know, not a super kid, not a bad kid, but just a normal kid, what happens? You're untouched by when a tragedy strikes in your life. Well, you're unhappy about it, of course, but you don't think it's your fault. But the thing is, when you start thinking it's your fault, it's because you have been trained to think every bad thing that happens is your fault. Mr. Blitzfith, who was in the comic strip of Little Abner, he would walk along the road, and wherever he would go, he had a black rain cloud hanging over his head, raining. And wherever he went, that black rain cloud went and rained on him. And he was always a very sad guy. Now, that's a psychological symbol. I mean, Little Abner was filled with psychological symbols, as were all of the comic strips in this, all the comic strips. And it's amazing. It's amazing. My ex-wife sent me a book, Peanuts, The Parables of Peanuts. And here it is, the Charles Schulz comic strip. And this theologian is taking the different comic strips, and he put a theological impact to them. He says, Charles Schulz was really a very spiritually illumined, spiritually directed man, and all of his comic strips had this deep spiritual impact to them. And then he points out what it is. Now, if we don't catch it, how wonderful. If we don't know that that's a deep spiritual impact, then he got the message across. But when we think it's a deep spiritual impact, then what we do is we say, no way. I'm not letting someone else guide my inner spiritual life. And we run away from it. Now, just think, if you can do so knowledgeably or so consciously with the comic strip that somebody says has spiritual impact, imagine what you do with your parents. It's a subtle thing that comes through, or with the other kids in the neighborhood. The other kids in the neighborhood throw stones at you, and they throw things at you, and you didn't do anything that you know of, you know. And you say, Mommy, why is everybody throwing stones at me? Why does everybody talk bad about me? Well, son, what's your opinion of yourself? Well, I must be pretty bad. Well, is that your opinion of yourself? Well, I don't know, Mom. What is my opinion of myself? Well, your opinion of yourself is, if you walk around with a happy smile on your face and do happy things and do fun things with yourself and everybody else, then everybody's going to think you're a fun guy. And if you walk around with a frown on your face, and if you walk around thinking the world doesn't like you and that nobody cares about you and everybody wants to take advantage of you, well, then they're going to do that because they read you like a book. You just shine right out like a book. Okay, now, so we can work with little children like that, and we can help them with the cloud that forms over their consciousness, and we can help them to remove that cloud and have better self-conscious attitude about themselves, better belief in who they are. But if they go back to the same environment that put the cloud there in the first place, then all the work that we might do to help them have a happy self-image is sort of wasted. It's sort of gone to nowhere, because the images that have brought us there in the beginning are back again. I have a number of people that I deal with who society calls mentally ill. Now, mentally ill doesn't mean that you're psychotic and you're in a mental hospital and so on. You are psychotic, though. And the word psychotic meaning you have a self-pity and a poor image of yourself. That's psychotic, you know that. Okay, so I'm dealing with these people, and their doctors say, well, the best way we can help you is to give you a pill so that you're not touched by the world around you. You're not touched by what people say or what people do, because all of your life you've been touched by it. All of your life. That's not just something new that happened today, you know, but all your life. Because your mother, your father, they took out their unhappiness on you, perhaps, or your brothers and sisters. use you as a kicking post or a whipping boy or a whipping girl, you know? And so that happens. That happens. Now, well, what takes place when that happens? We get a bad self-image of ourselves. We get a low self-esteem. And the low self-esteem grows and grows and grows. And when we do something stupid, people say, well, why are you so stupid? My gosh, you have no brains upstairs. You're an idiot, you know? And pretty soon we believe it. Well, we have created that for ourselves. You say, well, why should I have that burden? Why should that be something that I have to suffer through in this lifetime? Hmm? Well, when you came to this lifetime, you reached in the box of toys and you took out the box of chess. And the box of chess had many grade levels to it. It had the little people grade level. It had the learning people grade level. It had the women grade level who are dilettante at it. And then it had the more advanced levels and the more advanced levels. And the more advanced levels had no limits on it. No. You chose to take one a little high on the level. And you were going to be tested. You're going to be tested by all the experiences that come up in your life to see whether you are a master of them. Now, it's all in the game of chess. It's all the game you know how to play. It is a game you chose to play. And so you chose to have these people come up to you and say bad things to you. And now you chose to have a proper attitude about it. Because if you're going to win the game of chess, you have to play properly. So now you say, well, everybody picks on me. Nobody's picking on you. Everybody's trying to win themselves.
Nope.
Hush.
Don't.
Everybody's trying to win themselves. Now, Ingeborg is over here telling Rex to hush because right in the middle of my talk. And but why is she doing that? Because she wants attention. She wants me to look over there and say, Ingeborg, that's not the thing we do in the middle of Herb's talk. We don't go talking to the dogs, and we don't have conversations. In fact, Ingeborg, when Herb is talking, we give him 100% attention, you know, and we wipe off our mouth and do everything nice so that we're presentable. And it's just so wonderful. But you don't do it. Do it. My goodness sakes, are we sleeping here? I think we're sleeping here. Now, in life, we have so many of these things that we have allowed to be placed on our back. And if at any step along the way we want to feel sorry for ourselves instead of taking responsibility for ourselves, then we make the problem grow and grow and grow. Then we make the problem become more and more severe and more overwhelming until all of a sudden, you know, we lost our marbles, you know? And this happens to everybody at points in their life. It happens at everybody. Ah! Why me, oh Lord? Everything comes to me. Everything happens to me. Everything. Of course it does. Because you haven't taken care of it as you went along. Now, if you had taken care of it as you went along, you wouldn't have that problem. You wouldn't be facing all of these difficulties you're facing now. You wouldn't have self-pity. You wouldn't be feeling sorry for yourself. You wouldn't have these attitudes that would destroy you. Now, I deal each week with one, maybe two, maybe more, people who are going through mental dilemmas. They're going through this mental night of the living dead. And they're just having a great time doing it. And they're telling me all of the sadness of doing it, all of the unhappiness of doing it. And they really love it. They really love it because they put their concentration on where their attention is and what they want to experience. So they really want to experience the hell of the horror of the night, you know. They really want to have that because if they wanted to have something different, they would have it. Now, if Ingeborg goes shopping in the store, and Herb has told Ingeborg, I would like a bread that is whole wheat. I'd like a bread that is something that pleases me. And so Ingeborg goes in there, and she buys a beautiful loaf of white bread because it's damn cheap. See? It's damn cheap. It's only 7 cents for this loaf of bread that had usually sold for $2, you know, and she got it for 7 cents. And she said, I had to buy it because it was such a good buy. But Ingeborg, we don't eat white bread here. But I had to buy it because it was such a good buy. Ingeborg, if I eat white bread, it just makes my sugar level fly up through the ceiling. Well, I had to buy it because it was so cheap. And I said, yes, Ingeborg, that's what we do in life. We take things because it's easy. It's a simple way. It's so cheap. And, of course, that's about what it's worth, too. Now, I say this about Ingeborg because Ingeborg doesn't do that. Ingeborg goes to the store and buys the finest quality of foods that you can buy there always. She doesn't even look in the cheap, in the, what do you call that, bin where you stay old
or stale.
In the stale bin. She doesn't look there. She knows she doesn't want it, and she knows we wouldn't want it. So, now, why do we do things like that? Why do we buy the 7 cent loaf of bread because it's a bargain, because it's so cheap? We do that because that's the way we've been trained. We have no self-worth. We have no feeling that we're worth the best. We're worth the best loaf of bread. Now, I enjoy watching Sylvia go to the bowl of fruit. In the bowl of fruit is one orange that had a little bit of a bad part to it. Well, day after day, that orange remained in the bowl. And everybody picked around it and took the other oranges instead of that one. Well, today, it wasn't the last orange in there, but Sylvia finally decided to take that orange. And as she took the orange, she made it into a great presentation in front of all of us. She's eating it on her plate, and she's taking her knife, and she's like a doctor operating on a brain, you know, taking out the bad parts and cutting in the here and doing that. And her surgery was just exquisite, you know. She did it so beautifully that, and she made all of us aware that she took that bad orange and she took care of it. And you see, sometimes we have things.
Just say no, stop.
We are always looking at problems in our life when we are continually bringing it up. And Sylvia just had a great old time with that orange, bringing it to our attention. And this is what we all do as we are trying to find attention. Now, Ellen is over there trying to get attention with her dogs, and Sylvia has got her orange, and Rex has his button, and everybody here has some little gimmick. Now, Ellen, come and sit down and pay attention to our talk here rather than wandering around the room looking at the children. And the children are our dogs. You know how people have dogs. And love, love, shush. Okay, thank you. You see, all you have to do is get their attention. And if that doesn't work, then you put a towel over their head. So they're not aware of something to be distracting to them. Why do we do these things? Because this is how we've been raised. We want attention. And that's what the dogs want. Brian, our handyman, just drove up, and Ellen went out to take care of him, and he got Ellen's attention. And Ellen should have had a note out there saying, Brian, these are the things that you're to do. And then he would immediately go and do them, and she wouldn't have to go running out there and paying any attention. And you heard the phone ring there, and that's a telemarketing call that comes in here every morning at 8:35, and it seems like when we are on the recording here. So isn't that fascinating what we're creating in our world? We create these things mentally. We create these things because we have them. Now, let's get back to our mental instability. We go to the doctors, and the doctors give us pills. And the pills help us so that we don't have such tension and anxiety over things that are really not necessary to have tension and anxiety over. Now, how can a doctor give people pills, a pill, which is going to take away the anxiety and the tension? That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Now, how can a doctor give you a pill that takes away the anxiety and tension of what you've grown up with from little children, where you feel that you've been a bad child and you have caused your parents' death or something like that, you know, as you've seen movies about stories like that, where the little boy is riding with his mother in the car, and the car flips over, and she is killed, and he's not, and she says, I caused it, it's my fault, I told her to look at that rabbit, miss the rabbit on the road, don't hit the rabbit, you know, and she swerved out of the way of the rabbit, and I fell out of the car, and the car went over the bridge and killed her, you know, it's my fault, you know. Now, there was nobody there to help the little boy overcome that feeling, so his father was so destitute because the mother died, and he loved her very dearly, and they all loved her very dearly. And his son was there when it happened. Surely he must have been the fault somehow. And, you know, that made it exacerbate the problem to such a point that the kid, it just was a mental wreck, you know. So, okay, now, how can a doctor's pill release our tensions and release our attitudes and emotions, which get us to the point that make us feel that we should be upset about something? Well, there are certain nervous attitudes within our body that are controlled by symptoms in our body. It's controlled by nerves and controlled by relaxation. Why is it, now that's a good point, why is it that if we can learn to relax, that everything is in perfect order? Why is it when we can learn to relax, all the tension goes away? What is it that makes the tension go away when we relax? When we relax, all the pressure is gone, and all the unhappiness is gone, and all the feeling is gone of what it is that makes us feel unhappy. Now, what is the doctor giving you a pill in? Is it a pill in cutting off all those feelings? Is it a pill in making you relax? Is it a pill in taking away the tension? Well, it is. Mm-hmm. But they have found that a pill does a certain thing, and so they give it to you for that. They found that the pill, that these chemicals cause your body to not be so uptight and to be so tense. All right, now, what's in that pill? Well, in that pill is three things. One, the attitude of the doctor that the pill is going to work. Two, the attitude of the patient that the pill is going to work. Mm-hmm. And three, the placebo of the pill itself. Because a pill cannot do these things to you unless you unlet it. When a person is drunk with liquor, with alcohol, he knows what he's doing. He is his uninhibited self. Your inhibited self is the self of you that society finds tolerable to live with. Your uninhibited self is the self that society doesn't find desirable. Now, the same thing goes for drugs, and medical drugs or drugs that you use otherwise, like marijuana, whatever. These things take away your libido inhibitions, so that you are free to act like your normal attitude would be. Now, some people who are drunk are just really nice people, and that's because they're nice people there or anywhere. And think about it. I'm not trying to say we should get drunk or not. All I'm saying is that when whatever it is that releases our inhibitions, and it's our inhibitions are being released by the drugs and by these things. So now, if this is true, and the doctor gives you a pill that releases your inhibitions, then, in fact, you're being released of your inhibitions rather than being inhibited by your inhibitions. The drug is not inhibiting your bad actions, but it's releasing your bad actions. Now, perhaps the real you is the pain in the neck, and the inhibited, uninhibited you, that is, the inhibited you is a pain in the neck, and the real you is a lovely person. Mm-hmm. Now, but if the drug releases the inhibition so that the real you can come through, then how does that work? Well, I think we should all go and take a course in chemistry and in biology and in all these things so we learn about those things. That's terribly important. Or we can take my course. And my course is this. Come to me, all ye that are weary and heavy laden. What is it the Statue of Liberty says, you know? And I will give you peace. You know, come into the land of milk and honey, America, you know. Okay. Come into Herb's office, into Herb's heart. And Herb will look at you and he'll say, peace. And he'll say, now breathe deeply. Let it all out, peace. And by the time Herb is done with you and talking to you and loving you and unconditionally recognizing how great you are, you feel at peace. You feel relaxed. All the tension, all the worry, all the anxiety is gone because it was never really there. It was something you put on. It was something you made happen by your self-pity, by your feeling of unworthiness. People have such a feeling of unworthiness when they're mentally unstable. And they're mentally unstable because they have such a feeling of unworthiness. And this is what we want to work on. Now, I've talked with a lot of people, and most of them are about the same. They come because they're uptight about something. Life has dealt them a cruel blow. The woman they married wasn't as wonderful as she should have been, and the man they married wasn't as good as he should have been, and they made a big mistake. Their children don't behave. Remember, we tell the story about the teachers, one teacher in one room, same classes, you know, same grade, and says, hi, kids, what are we doing today? Well, we're going to study this today, teacher. Good, okay, now. And the other teacher goes in their classroom, and they're all throwing and shouting and stomping, and she comes in there. Nobody pays any attention to her. She goes up by her desk. Nobody pays any attention to her. She takes her stick, and she clangs it on the desk. Nobody pays any attention to her. And then, finally, she sits at her desk and cries. And then the students realize they've gone overboard a little bit, so they quiet down just a little bit. And she says, I don't know what I'm going to do. I need to have this job to pay my rent and to eat. And if you make it so hard for me to teach this job. Oh, come on, teacher, get off it, you know. We'll quiet down for you. But you see, they haven't won anything because she has a mental attitude that every time she goes in the class, the kids are going to think of ways of making her feel unhappy. Now, in The Sound of Music, when Julie Andrews took her purse, and in her purse was this frog that leaped out, sort of a surprise, you know. She was a woman, a girl of the field. She was a girl of the farm. She was a girl certainly used to frogs and things like that, but we're not used to something we're not used to coming out of our purse. And when the frog leapt out of her purse, you know, it gave her quite a start. And then when she sat down at supper, and there was a pine cone on her seat, and she sat on it, and she said, oh. And the master said, are you accustomed to sitting like that? And she wouldn't say a thing that the kids had done that. And so, of course, the kids knew that she was in charge of herself. She did what any person would do. Ah! You sit on a pine cone, it'll startle you. You take a frog out of your purse where they're not supposed to be, and that's sort of startling. But you see, she's untouched. She was touched from the point of view, these kids are going to be smarter than I am if I let them. But I'm just going to love them. And what kind of love did she get?
Unconditional
love. No conditions. Regardless. Mm-hmm. And you see, that's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. But what a lovely show, sharing unconditional love and being untouched by the environment around you. Now, she could have been. who were they who were touched by the environment around them there?
The children.
No, the previous nannies.
Yeah.
The children knew what they were doing. The previous nannies, they stayed there 2 hours, 2 days, or whatever, you know, and they couldn't handle it because they let the condition get to them. Because, you see, they created the life in which everything was bigger than they were. Everything was trying to mess them up. Everything, nobody wants to make my job easy. Well, Julie didn't think that anybody tried to make her job easier. She just said, these kids are sharp. would I do such a thing if I were in their place? Probably. If I had nannies like they had, that were lily livered chicken puss kids, you know, would I do that to them? Sure. Now, you see, that's a healthy person. That's a healthy person who takes life's adventures and makes the joy out of them instead of taking life's adventures. Now, when her boss got after her and says, you don't do that around here. This is what we do here. Choot-choot, and whistling with his whistle and stuff like that. And he says, you don't do that around here. You don't. She says, I am not whistled at. You don't call me with a whistle. I am not a dog. I'm not. And the master, oh, boy, we got a real live one here. And little did he know. But, you see, she stood up. And it got worse. It got worse. But she stood up. And when she fell down, then what happened to her? She wanted to run away.
Mm-hmm.
And she ran back to the monastery or the convent. And she ran back and she was in seclusion. She didn't want to talk to anybody because her heart was broken because all the things she had wanted to do so badly was not appreciated. But that wasn't the case. All the things she did were appreciated by the children, and that's all that was necessary. But she felt she was intruding on this man's marriage, and that's what made her so unhappy. She left because she felt that she was being a seducer to this man away from the woman he had promised to marry. And so that's why, but you see, you don't remember that offhand. You just think that she was so unhappy with everything and everything was so bad. She had such morals. She had such principles. She lived by such beautiful things that to seduce a woman, a man away from another woman was just unthinkable. Unthinkable. And you see, we put other stories on. Now, this mental illness that we have is a mental illness. Now, let me repeat that 2 million times now. Mental illness is a mental illness. Mental illness is a mental illness. Mental illness is a mental illness. It's something that takes place in the mind, in the brain. It's a mental activity. It's a mental activity, and it can be mentally worked with, and it can be mentally changed. It's the only way it can be changed. No drugs are going to help you do it. They may keep you relaxed long enough for you to maybe get a positive attitude about yourself, but as soon as the drugs are gone, you go back to that same old attitude you had before, and you're just as bad. Well, I just say to you, I have a closet over at the Hermitage, and the closet is quite large, really, quite large. It is about 8 acres, 8 acres. And it is filled with new garments. It is filled with new mental garments. And these new garments are, I like me, I delight in everything in life, and the garment that I have that sells the best, and I shouldn't say sell because I give them away, the garment that I have that sells the best is the garment of unconditional love. I tell you, I have trucks coming in this place every day with loads of unconditional love. Garments of unconditional love. And people are just taking them by the gross. Because, and gross means many dozens. And so they're taking them and buying them and giving them to their children, to their husbands, to their wives. to their mothers, to their fathers, and to themselves. And you see, every time you get an unconditional love garment, that garment is a spawning garment. It's a garment that little bubbles roll off of it everywhere of unconditional love, and then they grow into an unconditional love garment, and it captures the attention of somebody who says, oh, doesn't that look lovely? And they put it on, and they can never take it off. Because the unconditional love that they take on is so wonderful. And all of their anxiety, all of their unhappiness, all of their feeling of self-pity, all of their feeling of unworthiness is gone, gone, gone. Completely gone. Now, I wrote a letter about a young lady yesterday, and in the letter I said, she's really a very fabulous girl. And she wanted to come see us. And she didn't make it. But we'll see her. Now, is she going to have this condition continue? Or is she going to be master of this condition? Well, I had another letter this morning. And it was from Switzerland. Another friend of mine. And this friend of mine writes that she felt unhappy. She felt confusion. She picked up on a lot of different things from a lot of different people. And she didn't know what to do about them. And she says, I know that some people do this, turning into other people's vibrations, but I don't want to do that. I always thought I do not belong to them, since I'm not interested in such turning patterns to other people's vibrations. And she says, I'm strong enough to handle such moments, but why do I allow my creation I feel close to and love to freak out? Why do I allow people in my world to have these problems? I really don't understand my part. And then this lady said this here. She said, I listened to the Porcelain Share on Thought for Today the other day, and it's almost too complex for me to understand at all. Therefore, I know I should. Now, the Porcelain Share is just what this lady is. She is the vehicle through which people balance their emotions, through which people come to a new concept of themselves. Because as a porcelain share, what ingredient makes up her being?
Unconditional
love. Unconditional love is the hardness and the softness, is the beauty and the invisibility of everything she is. And because she has so much unconditional love, everything she does is a snap. Wherever she goes in to meet people, she is unconditional love. Wherever she goes in to do things, she's unconditional love. And as I reread her letter here, I see I misunderstood a word, which is okay, because it's just another person. And fascinating, just fascinating. Each one of us can leave behind all of that negativity that we had. We can leave behind all of that unhappiness that we had and claim for ourselves a happy person. People say, oh, Herb, you're so lucky. All of your life, you grew up as a happy boy. You grew up as a happy... Hey, yeah, that's what I chose when I came to this planet. That I'm a happy person. I'm a happy boy, you know? I didn't come on this planet to have problems or to have be tested. What's to be tested? Who's proving anything by being tested? We don't need to be tested. Just be wonderful. You don't need to be tested. Just be fantastic. You don't need to be tested. Who are you being tested for? You know? Are you God? Are you the creator of your world? Are you wonderful? Why are you being tested? Because you think you should be tested. Now, I tell you today and always, we do not need to be tested ever. And I tell you now and always, you are one step away from your spiritual mastership. And you will always be one step away from your spiritual mastership for your entire existence on this planet Earth, unless you say to yourself, I am a spiritual master. I am whole and perfect. I love me. I am unconditional love. But don't you have any problems? What? Don't you have any things that are going wrong in your life? What? Don't you wish for things in your life? What? Everything I think, I am. Everything I think, I do. Everything I think is me, and I have already. So, don't you want a new car? If I wanted a new car, I'd have it. Don't you want a new relationship? If I wanted a new relationship, I'd have it. And I can have it just like that by having my thought have a new relationship, a new car, a new what, anything. Are you ready for that? Boy, I think that's wonderful. And don't let anything disturb you. Nothing. If the dog comes up, wants your attention, and you don't feel like giving him attention, don't. If a dog comes up, wants your attention, and you want to give him your attention, then give it to him. But if you're supposed to be giving me your attention, and we're giving the talk here, then you better be paying attention here, or I will send you out of the room so that you can play with the dog and be uninhibited in playing with the dog. You know what I mean? That's just what it is. That's just what it is. So, our outer garments of horror, we claim that we think we're bad, we think we're not perfect, we think we are unlovable. So let's put on our new garment of unconditional love, which is our reality anyhow, and watch how wonderful everything is, really. This is just the start of a lot of thoughts like this that we'll be talking about. So, if you like it, tune in again tomorrow. If you don't like it, tune on something else. But that's who I am. I am unconditional love, loving each of you with all my heart, all my soul, and all my being. And that's all I know how to do. I love you. I love you.
I love you.